The first thing we hear when we talk about generative AI with folks in the health, insurance, any risk business, is they know how hallucination-prone transformer architecture is, and they are highly skeptical until we tell them we don't use it for much. And then they're interested, but they are very sensitive to hallucination. They're very sensitive to inauthentic things because in a very real sense, these folks are dealing with life and death, and they're handling data that's very sensitive. And so ambiguity is not their favorite thing, and I don't blame them at all. So we really try to stay much closer to the authenticity and reliability.
Welcome to the Conversations on Applied AI podcast, where Justin Grammans and the team at Emerging Technologies North talk with experts in the fields of artificial intelligence and deep learning. In each episode, we cut through the hype and dive into how these technologies are being applied to real-world problems today. We hope that you find this episode educational and applicable to your industry and connect with us to learn more about our organization at appliedai.mn. Enjoy.
Welcome, everyone, to the Conversations on Applied AI podcast. Today, we're talking with Matt Nash. Matt is the CEO at Kairos Technologies, where him and the team are focused on building a better future for healthcare by making technology products, recruiting the best in the industry, and directing them at the gross inefficiency and waste that is the health industry. He's skilled in technical architecture, team delivery, paradigms, applying emerging technologies, and leading effective teams that can execute. Thank you, Matt, so much for being on the program today.
Thanks for having me. I'm really excited to chat with you today. I appreciate that as a generous introduction. I've got about a decade's worth of experience in software engineering. I bounced all over from ag tech to fintech. I eventually found my way in med tech, and that really resonated with me because when I was 17, actually, I had a really rare, something called a myxoid liposarcoma. Now, I won't go into what that is, but it was very rare, very, very odd, not good, right? It's a type of cancer. I learned really quickly what that meant. It meant a lot of debt. When I was younger, meant a lot of strife. And so when I found medtech, I really found something that resonated with me. And that's why when we say gross inefficiencies, we don't just mean something impersonal. It's something a lot of us have seen. I'm sure a lot of your listeners have been through. So we're kind of on a mission to change that. We've all experienced it somewhere or another, either directly or through someone else. And right now, you know, I like to say we're starting from the top. That is, we're trying to break down the barriers between experts and data.
Okay.
Which right now are a huge, huge problem if you talk to anyone in the health space.
Yeah, and it's probably been a problem for decades. So, I mean, you're going to apply artificial intelligence to kind of help this issue?
Absolutely. Certainly everybody's cognitive of ChatGPT. It's ubiquitous, right? Mm-hmm. It's all over LinkedIn. Experts have cropped up everywhere. I'm proud to say that when we first had this idea, we were the crazy ones. We were seen as a little crazy a few years ago. We're using generative AI. We're not using the traditional, I say that with heavy air quotes, the traditional transformer architecture that you see used in GPT. We are using generative adversarial networks.
Okay. GANs.
GANs. That's right. We're channeling those to replicate tabular data that will very closely mimic, authentically mimic, in fact, ground truth data to create a digital twin of healthcare volume that is still private and can be propagated to, you know, any number of records, can be moved throughout platforms without risk. It's a pretty groundbreaking approach. There are very few competitors taking this particular tack that we take, but it's one that will allow that authenticity preservation that'll make the data still useful for other AI, for example.
Yeah, awesome. Well, I was looking up the name of your company. What, remind us or the listeners again what Kairos means.
I love to talk about Kairos. Kairos is the name of our lab, and we'll be producing multiple products in this lab. You can think of it as the health insurance world's Skunk Works. And we're building a lot of things that we've noted from our experience in the industry will help. And we saw that health is behind, you know, to be frank with you. I think we all know why it's behind, because data is really tough to get. It's tough to use responsibly. And there's a lot of well-deserved regulatory burden between innovators and you know, their ultimate designs. Kairos stands or means the Greek god of opportunity, to kind of shorten that up and make it as succinct as possible. It's an alternate concept of time. You can sort of hack years and years worth of progress if you strike at the right time, right? When the proverbial iron is hot. And so we see this as that time as generative AI emerges. We see this as that time when computing is becoming a lot more ubiquitous. You benefited greatly from the crypto crash and the subsequent reduction in expense when it comes to GPU hardware, for example. So we are finding an opportune moment to strike where we can in this healthcare space to solve the big problems that have, you know, in many cases remained unsolved for years.
Yeah, and so taking a generative approach, that's a different way to kind of come at the problem. Do you guys have like a basic use case where you would see this being applied?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it actually came from our efforts to use similar systems to Pandora or other music, right, recommender systems, which your audience may be familiar with, that say, hey, you like this song, you might like another song. Well, at this time, myself and my colleagues were working in enterprise for a major health insurer. And someone came along and said, I think it'd be really great if we could predict when people are going to need orthopedic surgery. And if we could tell that, we could navigate them to a better doctor that costs everyone less and then give them a little bit of those savings back. It sounds like a great situation. Everybody wins. It's a tough nut to crack. And the reason is people don't trust insurance companies, especially when they're telling you which doctor to go to. Nobody wants to hear that.
Yeah, yeah.
Most folks don't realize that costs and quality have no correlation whatsoever in healthcare. And we're hoping they do in the future. That's a big part of the transparency play that's underway. However, this created opportunity for us to predict these episodes as early as we could so we can navigate people to an area where they'd be able to get the same level of care for less and save a little bit of money on their premiums. Well, the incident for the particular case we were looking at, something like 0.1% a year. Not very common occurrence.
Pretty rare, yeah.
But very high dollar when it did occur. There were often many comorbidities that drove prices up. And so we were faced with the task of generating a recommender system for these folks and ended up with a recall of around 13%, which, hey, if background is 0.1, were we proud of that? You said 130x.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, it wasn't good enough. Yeah. It wasn't good enough to be actionable. And we learned a valuable lesson. It didn't matter if it was 130 times background noise, if background noise is that tiny. And so we tried oversampling, we tried numerous other approaches, and ultimately this led to the genesis of Titan, which is our generative data product coming out of the Kairos lab.
Okay.
Where we said, what if we just synthesized more data? What if we were able to avoid the issues with upsampling, right? Where we might introduce weird bias that we don't understand, and instead we're able to authentically replicate the very few knee replacements we had. So the use case is currently in production. I'm not saying it doesn't have room for improvement, but I will say that we have folks who are struggling with, we hear the same kind of struggle all the time, insufficient data, just for training recommender systems, for predicting readmissions, detecting fraud, pretty much anything that the machine learning function is trying to do both in provider and payer institutions can be augmented to solve the data bottleneck, as it were, with synthetic data. That's the future we envision.
That's awesome. And so when was the company formed? When did you guys come up with this product idea?
Sure. So product R&D started some years ago and had undergone very rudimentary research and development in the early days. Kairos is a lab. We started all over when the lab was founded because there were so many better systems, better approaches we could use. And that was early 2022. I think we committed our first line of code in May 2022. So just over a year ago that we've been in the market, and we decided to go to market last fall when we saw really promising results from the product.
Gotcha. Gotcha. And so do you guys help companies then take their data and integrate it in with your product? Are you a hands-off approach? Like, here's our stuff, go and have fun.
Yeah. So typically what we find, understandably, is that enterprise architecture, security, compliance, and the others are never going to put their data somewhere where we can learn from it if it's not on their system.
Yeah, sure.
So our model is to come on premises with right in the protected environment where the data exists. Okay. Treat it like a clean room. So we bring our Titan model in. We leave it on your hardware as provisioned to spec. We walk out the door. You transact the data onto it, let it train. It dings proverbially when it's done. This is when Hellinger distance and all the probabilities are correct, right? So we're constantly cross-referencing synthetic to real, synthetic to real. When that's done, the organization goes in, deletes their ground truth data, and all that's left is a relatively small generative model. You can poke that generative model and say, yep, there's no real data in here. And then we host it in the cloud or in a private cloud or on-prem, wherever it makes sense. The organization, they can pull any amount of data from it. In fact, I just asked our model to give me 50,000 novel records, and it did it in about just a few minutes here. So I've got this pulled up. I wanted to do that before the chat to see how long it took. Doesn't take long.
Yeah, doesn't sound like it at all. Well, one of the questions I like to ask people that are on the program is you know, what do you consider artificial intelligence? Like, how would you describe AI to somebody who maybe isn't in this industry?
I try to demystify it as much as I can.
Yeah.
And my biggest place to say it's been expert systems in some form of artificial, any approximate, an abacus to me is a little bit of AI, right? So let's not act like this is something entirely new. What is new is our ability to teach machines in a more complex way, for them to see connections and correlations we don't see. And obviously that's more of a question of what is a neural network than what is artificial intelligence.
Sure.
So I know a lot of folks want to differentiate and say artificial intelligence is only artificial general intelligence and everything else is some form of machine learning. I flip it a little bit the other way and say sort of everything's some proxy for our intelligence. We've codified our intelligence in almost every piece of technology we've ever built.
Mm-hmm.
What's different about this current generation is that it's able to learn alongside us in ways that we don't even quite fully understand yet. And that's what's so exciting and kind of scintillating about this new era. So artificial general intelligence is another matter. And I usually don't wax too much on that. I think it's an interesting topic. I think one of much debate. Yeah. I might side with Microsoft researchers who published the page that say, well, perhaps GPT is sentient, but not because it's AGI, but maybe you're just a large language model. I thought that was kind of a charming take on the whole question and one that I could identify with. So,
yeah. Good. Well, yeah, and it sounds like you're viewing this as a complementary technology, right? It's not this idea that humans are kind of done. And so in the healthcare space, you know, do you see your product then being used alongside physicians, for example, or people that are healthcare providers, or where in the sort of the healthcare food chain, I guess, do you see yourself living?
Yeah, so for this product in particular, you know, when we're talking about synthetic data, we imagine living in the data science departments, payer organizations, and research wings of provider organizations, but our products live all over the place. And from an AI standpoint, I really don't see, I think the larger question being, what's the replacement going to look like once AI moves in? All these knowledge workers are displaced. I think just in our products alone, there will be a new class of laborer, mental laborer, whose job it is to understand how to parameterize and interpret the output from models. Today, when I'm talking to organizations about how to use our product, we're getting a lot of blank stares.
Mm.
There aren't folks who have the intersection of business knowledge, enough understanding of generative AI to parameterize effectively, or the ability to think abstractly enough about the output to maximize its use. And I think I just said three different jobs, probably, to get specialized enough. And so the person who interprets the complex health contract and answers questions on the phone today,
We'll
probably reskill to understanding how to parameterize questions to a large language model, and others still will specialize in other AI adjacent fields. I think the great job loss will largely be a slow migration. Of course, we'll have some folks move along, but we're going to see that anyway with the boomer generation retiring. So there'll be some other confounding, you know, factors for that. But I think the generation of folks getting into the workplace right now have little to worry about as far as job security into the future when it comes to AI. I understand the specter of it. I just know that humans are great at finding ways to add value.
Yeah. And so I guess for our listeners, when you say parameterize questions, maybe we can drill a little bit more deeper into that. Like what's an example of that?
Yeah, I'm very happy to dig into that. Our model in particular, which I can speak to in some intimate level of knowledge, has 57 million different parameters.
Okay. Now,
frankly, we don't know what all of those are. And if you ask OpenAI, they'll tell you the same thing about ChatGPT with its, I believe, two trillion parameters. Imagine that. Imagine the vast corpus of knowledge that represents beyond every other word and how they interact. It's the structure of sentences and overall sentiment and thought is a lot less complicated for us in the abstract. We're interested in things like how diabetes and socioeconomic status as it correlates to zip code might be interesting. That might be one parameter for us.
Okay.
Another parameter might be how a diagnosis relates to another diagnosis, for example. So if somebody is overweight, they may also have diabetes. If somebody experiences X, they may experience Y, right? So these are just basic Bayesian principles, but we codify them into parameters.
Gotcha.
We have a lot of those, but the ability to ask our model for the right thing will be its own skill set, for example. So we might have a general model, which creates a general population of folks, which could be very useful if you want to test your system endpoints. But if you're interested in creating a detailed simulation of what the next year might look like in claim volume, mm-hmm. you're going to need to think in the abstract about how to parameterize our model. For instance, next year may be less of a COVID year than even this year is. And based on the hypothesis, we might sample from 2019 to build a really good corpus for generating synthetic patient encounters for 2024. There might be other things that we liked about 22 and 23, cancer treatments, for example, that we still wanted to see represented in 2024. So we could sample from there and then conditionalize and say, just don't give me any COVID stuff. Give me all the new stuff.
Gotcha.
And do some transfer learning so that we can create a realistic simulation of what the volume would look like. That's going to be quite an advanced skill. And I don't mean in the sense of a technical skill. It will require complex abstract reasoning, detailed business knowledge, and an ability to think in the abstract that I think is going to be in high demand.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned digital twin, I think, is that's kind of the word that you used. And I think that's been a buzzword, actually, that's been out for quite some time. But at the end of the day, it's really this, feels to me like it's this model that you can play with. So you can do a lot of what-if scenarios on it, right? It's sort of a representation of something my background is a lot is in the Internet of Things. So we talked a lot about IoT, like physical devices that are out there that you could start playing around with parameters, but it really applies anywhere. And I think that's the power of what you're talking about. Like, what if we were to try this?
Yeah, that's insightful, right? Digital twins first stood up as a concept sort of for a physical analog.
Yeah.
You could test the physics of a thing, a digital twin, put it through conditions you'd never put it through in a simulation. But imagine if we weren't talking about the physical characteristics, but the data characteristics of a tabular volume. And that's what generative synthetic data will be capable of in the future. There aren't a lot of folks commercial off the shelf that can offer that to you today. Be skeptical if they say they can, because I'm telling you, university folks we talk to are telling us it's just as hard for them.
Yeah.
These are the published folks on it. So they're the authority. It's hard work and it's difficult. Once we solve it and we're in the midst of it, we're going to see a class of business arise that is simulation driven. So capital markets, fast food chains, all of these will be using digital twins of their customer base to hypothesize new markets, to test out new products and the like. And I think it's going to be a pretty remarkable age.
Yeah, for sure. And when you were talking about these parameters and, you know, kind of having enough knowledge to be able to tune them in a lot of ways, you know, the big buzzword right now is prompt engineering. I have done a couple of different talks on that. Everyone's looking at ChatGPT saying, well, how am I going to ask the right question to get the right answer, right? That's a huge part of what we're dealing with here. And I feel like that's what you're also saying in your sector. People are going to have to know enough to ask the right questions.
That is absolutely right. We are still torn on whether or not we're going to use language processing prompts the way that GPT and, for example, Midjourney or Stable Diffusion do. Those seem to work really well for unstructured things, but we suspect our general user, will be very used to filtering data. And how different is filtering data from parameterizing generation? We think we might find something good in saying there is no difference. And I think folks are used to applying search filters, even casual Google users often do this. And so I imagine, at least for our tabular data generation, that that's where we'll start. And we'll have quite a high burden of proof to move to natural language prompt engineering kind of things, because it is so hard to get reliable results.
Yeah.
And that's one area where we're going to need to be very remarkably different from the transformer architecture. So we're going to have predictable, reliable, authentic results that are actionable in a business setting as opposed to sort of a fun toy.
Yeah. It feels like, you know, kind of know your user, and these people, like you said, I think are people that are sort of, you know, within organizations, probably already have some science background. They're probably used to, like you said, filtering and running queries or whatever, rather than just an end user that maybe is using ChatGPT.
Absolutely. And I'll tell you, when the first thing we hear when we talk about generative AI with folks in the health, insurance, any risk business, is they know how hallucination prone transformer architecture is. and they are highly skeptical until we tell them we don't use it for much. And then they're interested, but they are very sensitive to hallucination. They're very sensitive to inauthentic things in their world because in a very real sense, these folks are dealing with life and death, and they're handling data that's very sensitive. And so ambiguity is not their favorite thing, and I don't blame them at all. So we really try to stay much closer to the authenticity and reliability. Although we're playing with GPT-2. We have fun with it. Not to disparage it. We enjoy it. I use it for recreational purposes, for tabletop gaming and everything like that. I would prefer the Titan engine if my doctor was going to use something document research, though.
Yeah. In fact, I was just talking to a guy earlier this afternoon who their whole company is around, you know, kind of squashing hallucinations, right? They're trying to create a new product that is essentially hallucination free. That's the thing that they're bringing to market. But I think some of this dovetails into AGI because I feel like we're in a time right now where we are building AI systems that are very narrow for certain areas and they're really good at that. And it's almost like, do we actually need AGI in a lot of ways, right? Talking to a doctor and getting you know, medical advice is a lot different than me asking somebody, can you write me a poem? And is it so bad for us to be having tuning these models for optimal performance?
You know, I will say that it really isn't. And I don't think that AGI would present such a big benefit to society or be that big of a revelation once it arrived, because I think a lot of the utility will already have been achieved by augmented human beings using advanced generative models, using causal AI to understand their world even better. So I think when AGI arises, I won't say if, I'll say when AGI arises, I think it will be a bit of a anticlimax, right? If you were looking from the modern today's perspective, contemporary perspective for, I don't know, 50 or 100 years, by that time, it'll seem sort of a footnote as opposed to the revolutionary effect on society. Certainly from a philosophical standpoint, it'll be immense in so many ways. But in the way that we live our lives regularly, I don't think it would have quite the impact we're expecting it to, things that we haven't already achieved through other means.
Sure. Well, one of the other things I like to ask people on the show is, you know, if you were to rewind back in your career, maybe just coming out of school, for example, like what classes would you suggest people take or books they read or conferences they attend or stuff like that if you're just getting into this area?
You know, thank you for asking that. I think the most effective source for me early on, this is when I was a software engineer and I was working in ag tech. I started listening to Tyler Ranelli's podcast, which was Machine Learning Guide. You might be familiar with it. Very, very helpful. Uh-huh. It was just sort of a primer. I don't think he does it anymore, but it was really great for going from software engineer to ML nascent as an actual practitioner and gave some good examples of doing that. That was his target audience. If you're of a business nature, there's a great book called Prediction Machines, which talks about, you may be familiar, talks about this really as a change in the cost of inference as opposed to anything else. And if we can frame the computing revolution as a change in the cost of computation and look at all the implications of that, what might happen if inference becomes free? And that's a pretty astounding book to read if you really absorb it. I suggest all leaders, not just technology leaders, all leaders, because many of you are leading data companies and don't know it, to read that book and think about what inference tasks your company does that are should essentially now in the next decade become free or near free and how that changes your business. So that's highly recommended. For young engineers or just new engineers, I shouldn't say young engineers, new engineers to the field, there are a ton of great resources out there, open source tools. And I'll tell you, even at a company like ours, you know, we're going to market. We've got national tier interest in customers, it's still some version of open source libraries that we've heavily developed on. Those don't cost you a thing. You can pull those things in at home and start tinkering with them, and they're surprisingly well documented, many of them, and are really easy to get started with. So I usually recommend Python and some open source libraries, and there are some great books. Data Science from Scratch is the one I started with when I started getting a little more practical. So
that's great. You're right. That's the beauty of the internet. There's just so many tools out there. We'll definitely include links to all the things that you talked about in the liner notes for this, so people will be able to click on them and check them out. Prediction machines is interesting because I think from, it's been a year or so, but it's written by economists, I think. These guys are, and so they're taking that sort of cost and that free cost and sort of applying it just across the industry. And the book is kind of getting a little older, I think, but it is like still 100% spot on. I love it. I love it.
Yeah, I think it does a better job explaining the practical effects of machine learning and more broadly AI than most other speculators today. I think it's easy for us right now to see all the great effects. Generative AI get very excited and misty-eyed, but I think they had quite a sober take. I still want to say it's profound, or not profound, it's visionary and profound, but it's also very sober, so it can be used in a practical sense.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Well, Matt, I guess, how do people get a hold of you?
So you can reach out to me at matt@titan, T-I-T-A-N, synthetics.ai.
Perfect. Our
name is such because I hope there's a whole industry of competitors in the synthetics industry that are working on other types of problems. You know, we stand in the medical space primarily and may dabble in other verticals, but I imagine a world where there are synthetics vendors across all different industries, and maybe one of your listeners will be creating the next one.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, we'll put a link off to your guys' website and all that stuff as well. Are you guys hiring?
You know, always. Growth is volatile. So I think my next hire will be in the next week, and then I don't know after that. Yeah. We're still very small. Always hiring. Always want to see and meet folks and answer questions from prospective employees. Because at the very least, we're all engineers that have been through it too. Mm-hmm. Happy to hear from you. Happy to learn about you and what you're passionate about.
That's good. That's good. Yeah, we'll put a link off to your contact us page and people can reach out to you directly. Is there anything else maybe that I didn't touch on, you know, that you would like to maybe put a little bit of an exclamation point on some of the topics we covered or anything new?
Yeah, you know, the one thing I said, so I was up in your neck of the woods, like I mentioned just a couple weeks ago, and the slide I ended on with a bunch of insurance executives was, all it said was, remember your purpose. And what I was trying to drive home there was not some, glib, goofy, thing that has nothing to do with practical implication. It's instead, don't try to make this a tool to reduce your FTE, right? If I get to talk to the executives who are making the buy in the AI space today, I know the pressure, I know the temptation you're dealing with. I understand the opportunity space to you has got to translate to dollars. I know that. Resist that temptation as much as you can. Think of it as appending your capabilities. Because if you don't, right, you're going to miss a bunch of new product offerings that you can bring to the table. B, you may lose your current market to someone sitting in their living room who can generate the same services and infrastructure you've got for a fraction of the cost with generative AI and make it seem like an army of 1,000 when it's one person. It's slightly hyperbolic, but not by much. And so I invite executives, I invite folks working in established industry today to really take a minute, step back and think about this technological revolution. This is not the internet. This is the printing press. That's the level of technological evolution we're at right now. It's going to have that much of an upsetting effect on everything we do, on all the nature of the data on the internet. So if you fail to take advantage of that as a change agent, as a way to reimagine yourself, the way that you fulfill your mission to your customers, somebody else will certainly do it. It's a major inflection point we're in the middle of. The reason you can't see forward is because we're in the singularity right now, right? Nobody knows what will happen tomorrow. And so that puts you, it's actually advantageous to you if you're in an established position in industry to say, okay, well, Google might know a lot, but they don't know my industry. Amazon might know a lot, but they don't know my industry. Why not us? Why not us reinvent ourselves? Why not us take the next step creating AI tools? Now, it can be tough to get the talent, I know, but you got to be thinking in those terms. And if you're thinking in those terms, you'll be all right. You'll weather it, right? But the arrogance of, hey, we're an established industry, it'll always be here, do not count on that, because this is printing press big. And like Fauna saying, you know, there's a reason certain religions just died out right around that time. They're the ones whose towns didn't have printing presses, right?
Sure.
It's an enormous magnifying effect on emerging ideas and existing ideas, and it democratizes things in a way that I think industry is not ready for. And so it's not folks like me who have to get it. We get it. You're trying to build that future. You've got to get it as an industry leader, and you've got to take lead in the company, be that voice. If they're listening to this podcast, they're probably already not just thinking in dollars and cents. They're probably abstract thinkers. They're probably faced with folks who think that way often. You're going to have to keep fighting that fight to keep your company above water, to keep them relevant in the future, because they'll lose the plot.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, as you were talking, I was thinking about the book, The Innovator's Dilemma, which is by Clayton Christensen. And I remember reading that quite some years back. And it kind of goes through a series of these companies just, you know, they stuck to their guns and did the same thing over and over again. And there were all these little companies that at their point, they're like, oh, these are little ankle biters. They're not doing much. No. Completely disrupted the entire business. And they were out of business within a decade. So yeah, we are at an interesting time. And I think a lot of it's also going to be, you're right, people are just trying to figure it out. I mean, I think it's so early right now that a lot of executives, I feel like, are just kind of, well, scared, I guess. They don't really know what's coming down the
line.
Yeah,
let's use that fear.
Right.
Fear's not the worst thing if it catalyzes us to action.
Right. Yeah. You know, some great things can come out of that.
Right. And so I think let's be smart about it. Like, we're not be too reactive. But you can find partners in this space who've got expertise, who are willing to speak with you about it, whether they have a product to sell you or not, irrelevant, right?
Yeah.
Most of the folks in this space now who actually have a product to show you, us included, were in it before it was cool, before it was very profitable, right? So we're passionate about the topic. You've still got a great resource there. Most of us will chat with you just to hear something about where you're at and what you're worried about. And the existential question I try to pose to these folks is, imagine what kind of impact do you think AI will have on your industry? And then I like to follow it up with, okay, now imagine somebody who's solved or who's on the other side of that impact. Mm-hmm. Would you compete with them? If the answer to that question is no, it's probably no.
Yeah.
If that answer is no, you have work to do, right? And we and others can help you do that work, or at least strategize, position yourself for how you want to handle it. So recommend that you reach out and get to know somebody in the space. You're probably going to have to partner up. And, you know, there are a lot of great partners out there that can help you get to that next point. So,
For sure. Well, great, Matt. I appreciate your time today. Thank you for all the work that you do. It sounds like quite an awesome product that you guys are bringing to market, trying to kind of revamp healthcare, which is, like you said at the beginning, it's in desperate need. It's way out of date right now. So a lot of people are coming at it from different angles, and I respect all the work that you guys are doing at your business, and wish you nothing but the best to succeed.
You've listened to another episode of the Conversations on Applied AI podcast. We hope you are eager to learn more about applying artificial intelligence and deep learning within your organization. You can visit us at appliedai.mn to keep up to date on our events and connect with our amazing community. Please don't hesitate to reach out to Justin at appliedai.mn if you are interested in participating in a future episode. Thank you for listening.